believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everybody. I am sorry for the technical difficulties. I told you the last couple days we've had some issues with the ISDN line, and today it bit us in the butt as we're trying to do a nice show because we have I get to announce the winner for the prize system that we're doing at RBN in November. So, with that being said, let me give you guys a couple of updates. We've been following this story with a fellow by the name of Jim Dunsing, who was shot by the Las Vegas police in Las Vegas, the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, last Thursday, October 30th. Now, Jim happens to be a personal friend of mine, as well as a colleague, fellow firearms instructor, and on top of that, he's also worked as my private attorney on occasion. I actually went into Las Vegas, because I live about an hour outside, and saw Jim yesterday in the hospital. Now, Jim was pretty worse for the wear, not so much because of the healing from the gunshot wounds specifically, but they had to operate into his chest cavity area for the first couple of gunshot wounds, and that happened last week. He's been recovering from that. One of the rounds actually went through his chest area and shattered his elbow, and shattered his humerus, his upper arm bone. So he had surgery on that yesterday morning, and when I got to see Jim yesterday, which is about 2 in the afternoon, I guess, local time, he was pretty bad off. He said that he was experiencing the worst pain he'd felt since he got to the hospital. They put 4 pins in his arm in the surgery, and they had finally given him enough pain medication that it wasn't hurting quite so bad anymore. Anyhow, so I had the opportunity. I talked to Jim 2 or 3 times on the phone before going to see him yesterday, early in the week. And as it turns out, by the time I got to see him, he was really in bad shape. He was just hurting, just plain hurting. With that being said, it was an inappropriate time to try to do an interview. On top of that, I asked him if he had secured representation, if he had gotten an attorney. And I understand that he has gotten an attorney. And his attorney told him, look, let's hold off on the interviews until you and I can sit down and talk about this whole case. So the best I'm going to be able to do is repeat some of the things that we had in a conversation, because at that point in time, it's not what Jim's saying, it's what I'm saying. Jim had something to say while he was on morphine. So that's good enough right there. So we're going to cover just a few of those things coming up in the next segment, as well as announcing today's winner for the prize from RBN. That's going to be coming up in segment 2 after the commercial, which is coming up in just a few minutes, as well as talking just a little bit more about the 2A Radio Defensive Handgun course coming up in March 2010. So, everyone, please stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Rule 1,
assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Karn. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back. We seem to have our technical difficulties and all of the bumpers ironed out. So, welcome to what should be a just Jim Dandy rest of the show. In March, and I'm still working out the dates because I have to work out the dates with the ranges, we're going to have a three-day defensive handgun course, 2A radio defensive handgun course, with yours truly running this course. I have, I don't know, countless hundreds of different courses that I've run, range mastered, at the largest firearms training center in the world for people to come and learn how to shoot. Experience in range mastering. I'm a five weapons range master, which there's only maybe a couple dozen qualified five weapons range masters out there. That would be handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, and precision rifle, aka sniper rifle. And there's a lot of people that have certificates that say, okay, well, I can teach these different things. When I use the term qualified, I mean people that can are actually qualified, able to run and hold these courses. So I'm going to be doing a three-day defensive handgun course for those of you who want to keep a handgun for self-protection. Now, some people like to keep a handgun in the car in case they need it. Some people like to keep a handgun in the house in case they need it. Well, just so you understand, the vast majority of attacks, criminal attacks on citizens, people like you and I, the good folks of the nation, happen in transit between things such as the vehicle and the building you're going to be in. Not quite as much when you're in the vehicle or when you're in the building, but more when you're outside of each one. So if you're going to protect yourself, if the laws in the area where you live allow for it, and you're able to carry a gun, well, best to carry between these things. Carry concealed weapons, something like that. So that's what this particular course is going to focus on. It's going to be fundamentals of grip and stance and being able to actually hit your target with sight alignment, sight picture, trigger control, some follow-through, understanding where the proper areas to actually engage, proper number of rounds, how to keep your gun loaded and running and clearing any malfunctions, and decision-making when it comes to bad guys and what their intent is, as well as actually shooting within the proper distances that most citizens and civilians tend to get into fights with guns. That's really what we're looking at. That doesn't mean we're going to be shooting out to 15, 25, 30, 40, 50 yards with a handgun. The ability to do that exists. It's no big deal. In fact, hitting a target, a steel target, standing offhand with a handgun at 100 yards, a 10-inch steel target, is really not that difficult if you understand the principles. However, defensive shooting is not out at 100 yards. Somebody that's 100 yards away and you've got a handgun, they've got a rifle, probably shouldn't engage them. If they've got a handgun, just leave. Because chances are the untrained opponent has no chance in actually hitting you. So we're going to keep these at very reasonable and quite honestly a little bit closer distances based on what most people who actually have to use a handgun for self-defense experience, which distances those are. So you can certainly check on the website at 2aradio.com. 2A is in Second Amendment, 2aradio.com. Keep checking for updates. I will have that on the homepage as well as an ability to sign up. I hope to have all of that shored up within the next week to 10 days. Have the facility, have the dates, and have everything shored up with tuition numbers and things such as that. What you're going to need to bring, suggested ideas for firearms, what to look for, what to stay away from, types of holsters, magazine pouches, numbers of magazines, ammo count, and anything else that's going to be pertinent. That's what we're going to be looking at. And then from there, you'll be able to sign up. There will be a deadline beforehand because I'm going to need to get materials ready before that date comes. So after the end of the sign-up date, between that and the class, that's when I'll be collecting together all the materials needed to run the course, and then also securing the staff. I happen to have access to some of the best staff available in the country. So this will by far be, if you have experience with a handgun, If you have never had experience with a handgun, I flat guarantee you, whatever level you come in at, you're going to be better, and you're going to have a better skill level by the time the class is over and you leave. And I will guarantee that. And this is the way I'll guarantee it. If you don't leave better than what you came in with in 3 days, I will refund your money at 100%. If you have not improved in 3 days, and you haven't had a noticeable improvement, I will refund your money at 100%. That's just the way it's going to be. So, with that guarantee, how could you possibly lose? I am doing my best to put together some sort of hotel accommodation package so that you can come out here to Southern Nevada and enjoy yourself. Now, switching gears just a little bit. At RBN, we're doing a holiday giveaway every day in November. Some of the great sponsors of RBM have donated their products as a thanks to our listeners and RBN as a thanks to our sponsors for helping to keep RBN active, live, and on the air, and to support our sponsors the way they have supported us, as well as reward our listeners. So today, can I get a drum roll? Okay, there we go. There's the drum roll. There's the RBN drum roll. Today's winner, you have won 2 half-ounce .999 fine silver from opencurrency.com. And the name of that winner is Richard Fasula from Lutz, Florida. Richard Fasula from Lutz, Florida, you have won 2 half-ounce .999 fine silver from opencurrency.com. Go local, buy local, barter is better. Your two tokens can be circulated in the 26,000 merchant strong barter network, including AG Trading Post and the nation's first store that refuses Federal Reserve notes, located in Dallas, Texas, and coming soon to towns near you. Find out more online at opencurrency.com. So there you go. You're good to go. Congratulations to Richard Fasula of Lutz, Florida. Okay, carrying on. With Jim Dunsing. Again, I was actually with Jim yesterday, and I was able to see him face-to-face. Up until this point, I had actually only talked with him on the phone a few times. And here's really what happened. We've been reporting because it came out that Jim was shot in the back. In fact, he didn't get hit in the back. Evidently, the police officer was pacing him, paralleling him, to his right off a few yards. The distance is yet unknown, but off a few yards off to Jim's right. Jim is right-handed. Okay. The police claim Jim went into his pocket and retrieved a handgun. However, they also claim that Jim went into his pocket and pulled out a knife because he had a folding knife in his upper pocket on the right side. And he had a .45 caliber 1911 in his cargo pocket, lower down on his thigh on his right side. It wasn't in a holster on his belt. It was in a cargo pocket. So you can imagine it's a little bit tougher to get in there and pull anything out. Besides, if you were to try to get in there and pull anything out, you'd have to stutter step and not actually be able to continue a full pace sprint, which is what we understand was going on. So the officer's claim is that he saw Jim pull out a knife. Then he also claims that Jim went to pull out a gun. So, whichever it was, now we have conflicting stories. So, then Jim gets shot at, we believe that 3 rounds were fired, 2 hit Jim. Since the officer was off to his right, 1 went in just underneath the pec muscle, right, basically where your right breast is. Underneath the pec muscle, did not enter into the chest cavity, really kind of hugged underneath the skin and the light little bits of muscle under the right pec, bounced off the front of the sternum, and then exited the left pec. And then evidently, as Jim's arm was swinging and he was running, the bullet then went into his arm and shattered the humerus in his left arm. leaving it essentially dangling off to the side. The second round that hit Jim, the second of two, went into the right abdomen and exited the left abdomen. Neither of these rounds hitting any vital organs. They were not in the chest cavity. Now, had the round that went into his pec, we don't know which one hit first. The one that went into his right pec, had that been back about 2 or 3 inches, it would have entered into the thorax, into that thoracic cavity area, and undoubtedly punctured a lung and possibly hit his heart. So the Las Vegas Metro Police Department, this happened last Thursday, Las Vegas Metro Police released their arrest report that the officers filled out. There was one officer involved. He was a motor cop. Tickets and accidents, right? He's on a motorcycle. And Jim was running towards another motorcycle cop who had stopped another car on an unrelated, separate traffic violation. Evidently, from what we understand, there were several witnesses that said, hey, I saw this, but the police did not take their statements, at least not immediately. So we're going to talk a little bit about what these folks claim to have seen and what the police department is beginning to claim. So stay tuned. We're going to hear a little bit more about this whole convoluted case involving Jim Dunsing after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
My children were very disrespectful. They were defiant. The results from the total transformation were all.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carr.
And welcome back. Okay, so we were talking a little bit about Jim Dunsing and the update on him. So Jim ended up getting shot twice, and the police officer that shot him, of course, is saying, oh, he went to pull out a gun and a knife. Now, which was it a gun or was it a knife? Because the reports are saying that you said both. And he was running into the direction of a second cop, who's actually the one that put him on the ground and hooked him up. And, of course, we understand his version of the arrest report is quite similar to the first guy. There are eyewitnesses that were not interviewed. Now, the internal investigation, generally when there's something that where there's a police-involved shooting on Las Vegas Metro. Now, I was an officer on Las Vegas Metro in the mid-90s. I left in May of 96, so I've been gone for some time now, 13 and a half years. It's been quite a while. Generally, the homicide division will investigate any police-involved shootings, whether somebody died or didn't die, just in case they do die. And Jim is not at risk of dying. He's going to have a full recovery. Internally he's going to have a full recovery. Hopefully, his left arm will have a full recovery. We're waiting to see that. So we have a cop who pulled Jim Dunsing over for a misdemeanor traffic offense. And when he ran Jim over the radio, he finds out that Jim had a warrant out for his arrest for another misdemeanor traffic offense. So Jim is a full-on misdemeanor suspect, the lowest rung you can get. Now, in some states, they have something even lower than a misdemeanor, which is referred to as an infraction. Okay? So they would have, like in California, they have an infraction, slightly more serious than that is a misdemeanor, more serious than that is a gross misdemeanor, and then more serious than that is a felony. In Nevada, drop off the infraction. There is no such thing as an infraction in the state of Nevada. There are misdemeanors, gross misdemeanors, and felonies. So he got a misdemeanor traffic citation for driving in the carpool lane by himself. Now, he didn't take care of that ticket. It went to warrant, which is an automatic thing. So the warrant was for the value of the ticket. And Las Vegas Metro has complete discretion in deciding if somebody has a warrant, whether or not they have to take him to jail. In the city of Henderson, Nevada, which is a suburb. It's a next-door neighbor to Las Vegas. Actually, there's Las Vegas, then there's some county area, which people consider Las Vegas, and then there's Henderson. Las Vegas and Henderson, by true boundaries, don't actually touch. There's massively developed county area in between the two. In Henderson, the police, at least they used to, at least back in the mid-90s, if anybody had a warrant, they had a policy, not a law, but a policy that said, anybody's got a warrant, you bring them in. That's not so with Las Vegas Metro, who is the organization that stopped Jim. Jim, not wanting to go to jail for what was probably about a $150 warrant, tries to talk to the cop. Now, keep in mind, Jim, by pure nature, he's a bit of a smartass. And he'll challenge you verbally. He'll challenge you. And the cop tells him, turn around, put your hands on the car. And he says, look, I just want to talk about this, something along that lines. And the cop tells him again, he says, turn around, put your hands on the car, or I'm going to tase you. And Jim says, you're not going to tase me. So rather than the cop saying, look, I'm going to put you in cuffs, we'll talk about it once you're in cuffs, or whatever he could have done. Am I Monday morning quarterback? You bet your butt I am. Because I have been in the cop's shoes. And one of the reasons that I found fit to leave was because of all the different Neanderthal type of officers that I worked with. I just saw the sheer level of intellect of the average street cop non-existent. Not all of them, just a lot of them. A lot of guys I worked with were just thugs with a badge. And that's the way they operated, as though they were a thug with a badge. They had some brains because they had to understand the law, understand how they could do things, but when it came down to actual interaction with the rest of society and oftentimes other cops, it was just a thug mentality. So that sounds like what was probably going on here. It was a thug mentality. Look, I told you to do this, so do it, or this is what I'm going to do. So now the cop himself is elevating this to a use of force. This is merely dialogue that's going on. So the dialogue that he's receiving is not a threatening dialogue. It's a, I want to talk about this. You're not going to shoot me with the taser. That's all he got. So what does he do? Now, he began this by saying, all right, do this or I'm going to tase you. Jim said, you're not going to tase me. So now the cop is stuck through his own damn words, through his own mouth. Now he's got to tase Jim. Jim's got a heart problem. So he starts to run and rips the taser out of his chest. Now, it's electrocuting his right arm, which is a lot like getting hit in the funny bone. That's the way the right arm works. If you've ever been hit with a stun gun or a taser, and if you've gotten hit in the arm, and these things are now dragging behind him on his arm, and it feels like you just got your funny bone whacked massively. And he starts running. Okay, now we're going to take a break here. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about the lack of use of this arm and what the police claim he was doing with the arm, which is in total contradiction to everybody else that was there, and whether or not that's going to matter. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
So I've got a question for you here. Do people with multiple personality disorder have to take roll call every morning to make sure everyone's up and at them? What if one of the personalities doesn't need coffee, but one of the other ones does? I mean, is it kind of a trade-off? I ask that because it would seem as though a lot of cops have multiple personality disorder because when they're at home, They work one way. When they're with a group of cops in the briefing room, they're another way. When they're dealing with the public, they're yet another way. Now, of course, the whole to protect and to serve thing has been out the windows for a long time. What I'm wondering is why they don't just put, we treat you like a king, with a little asterisk and a caricature of Rodney King on the side of the cars and the motorcycles. Because that would be the way that the vast majority of big city police are. That's the mentality. We treat you like a king, like Rodney. So here we have, to recap just a little bit, we have Jim Dunsing, who was pulled over for a misdemeanor traffic violation, who had a warrant out for a second misdemeanor traffic violation. And now the cop wants to arrest him because evidently he doesn't like Jim's smart mouth. Okay? Jim challenges him verbally. It's like, hey, look, I want to talk about this. I don't want to just go to jail. I want to talk about this. And, you know, Jim's an attorney, so he knows what the law is. He knows the way that Metro has to operate. Cop says, no, do what I say or I'm going to tase you. Jim challenges him. I say, yeah, you're going to tase me. So does the cop do? He tases him. So Jim has a heart problem. He was born premature. He's had a heart problem all his life. Okay, it hasn't gotten better. He's just learned to manage it. He knows that getting tased could cost him his life. Many people die from tasers in the hands of police. So Jim begins to run away from this, running towards the back of his car, ripping these tasers out of his chest. They're now zapping the living hell out of his right arm. He is right-handed as he's running down the street. He finally gets away from the tasing and the electricity shooting through his arm, which, again, is much like just jamming your funny bone to the point where you can't use it. And you've got to recover a bit from this. So he's running. The cop tries to tase him again, doesn't work, evidently drops his taser, pulls out his gun and shoots Jim. Shoots at him, I don't know, 3 or 4 rounds, hits him twice. Jim goes down when another cop who's running towards him, because you got a traffic cop on one side of the street pulling Jim over, traffic cop on the other side of the street pulling someone else over. So cop number one who stopped Jim is paralleling Jim, shooting at him from the side. He's looking at Jim's right side. He can see Jim's right hand. Jim's entire right arm is recovering from 50,000 volts of electricity. Not a very useful hand at this point in time. So it would have been immensely difficult, if not just downright impossible, for Jim to either reach for the knife in his pocket, or even more so, to reach for the gun in his cargo pocket. Because here's the deal. If you're actually going to be running and you reach into a cargo pocket to get something out, you can't do it while that leg is moving. It doesn't work. The cop would have had plenty of time to come over and tackle Jim because he was that close. But no, he shoots an unarmed guy who's running from a misdemeanor traffic stop with a misdemeanor warrant. He shoots him. Jim's still running because he doesn't even know he shot. He just notices his left arm is flopping around. There's adrenaline going. The cop that he's running towards tacks him onto the ground and hooks him up. Once that happens, they begin to search Jim. That is when they find the knife in the upper right pocket and the .45, the 1911, in his cargo pocket. And of course, now they're looking at each other like, oh, damn. You just shot a misdemeanor guy. We better make sure that we put in our arrest reports he was reaching for one of these things. Now, keep in mind, this 1911 in Jim's cargo pocket in Clark County, Nevada, where Las Vegas resides, which is where Jim was, which is the police department that stopped him. Las Vegas Metro serves the city of Las Vegas and unincorporated Clark County. Any of the little townships that are around there can hire Metro to come out there and police there, which they do. They have resident officers all over. 65,000 square miles is the county. 650 square miles is the Las Vegas Valley, but the county is 65,000 square miles. It's very large. So he's in the county. In the county, you have to register handguns. So Jim's handgun is registered. He has what's referred to as a blue card, which is what they give you when you register it. In addition to that, Jim has a Nevada concealed weapons permit, and that gun is on it. So it was in his cargo pocket completely legally. Plus, he had a folding knife, an Emerson. Who doesn't have a folding knife? I've got one right here. Can you hear that? Can you hear that little snap of the knife? And mine, along with quite a few others, as soon as I pull it out of my pocket, if I put pressure towards the rear, the blade opens. I can have my knife out of my pocket and ready to use in about a half a second. Now, if the cop claims that Jim pulled out his knife and wanted to use it, how much time does it take the cop to register this, pull out his gun, and then shoot? In the amount of time Jim could have used the knife. Okay, so that's an empty argument. And again, if you want to try this, put something large in your pocket. Like just grab a big old squirt gun or something. Put it in your cargo pocket of your BDUs or your 511s. And start running. And we're talking full sprint. And try to get that thing out. As you fail to maintain your sprinting level of speed, see if your buddy can come up and tackle you, or just put hands on. If Jim were to have gotten that thing out, I guarantee you, Jim is a good enough shot, he could have shot anybody he wanted. Which means the cop would have needed to have already had his gun out, not knowing that Jim had a knife or a gun on him. So there are huge holes in the cop story. Oh, he reached for a gun, or he reached for a knife. All right, well, we're going to see. Now, Dave Champion and I have talked about going to this very location, as soon as Jim's out of the hospital, have a show of some stuff, and having Dave and I reenact this, both me as the bad guy and him as the cop, and then reversing it, him as the cop, me as the bad guy, with Jim describing how this thing went down. And then we're going to film the way this goes down. We're going to reenact this deal. And see if the claims in the officer's report actually hold water. Now, on Monday, Las Vegas Metro released the officer's arrest reports in this. I'm going to do my very level-headed best to get a copy of this. I know how to read an arrest report. I've written hundreds. Dave Champion is the same thing. Dave Champion has written hundreds, if not thousands, of arrest reports. We know how to read and interpret these things. Then we're going to go look. We're going to do our own independent investigation to see if their claims hold water. Because you never know. Jim might be lying. What the cops said might be right. I doubt it. But the cops might actually be completely honest about what happened here. Again, I doubt it. There are names of a couple of people who witnessed this. I have a list on my PDA going and going and going and going to submit to Jim and his attorney on the things to look at, ways to investigate, and information to subpoena. And I'm going to submit this to him once, you know, Jim starts to health up a little bit, he gets out of the hospital. They told him he could leave as early as today, most likely, once they look at his arm. He looked like he was in enough pain yesterday that he might actually stay another day or two. That was pretty heavy-duty surgery on his arm. So we're going to look in and see exactly what really went down with this deal and see if the police arrest reports hold water. Now, I suspect they don't hold water. However, when we actually do the little reenactment that we intend to do, I'm not going to have that in my head. Dave Champion has said he won't have that in his head. I shouldn't say he said that. Through our communication, I got that as an indication that we're going to do this straight up and see. Because we, you know, right now, everything points to the cops are full of garbage and they're lying to cover their butts because a guy shot a misdemeanor fleeing suspect, which you cannot do in this country. However, Jim might be lying. Again, I doubt it. But we're going to run this thing independently. We're not going to run it as though, okay, you know, we're going to prove the cops wrong, or we're going to prove Jim wrong. We're not going to do it. We're just going to do it and see what happens. Dave and I have done different tests in the past when it comes to like shooting related stuff. And we've always done it to just say, okay, let's see how this actually works out and see which side holds water. And it's always, so far, it's worked out the way that we figured it probably would. We haven't been surprised with the results yet. So we're going to see. We're going to see how this thing works out. And from there, if it doesn't work out, guess where that information is going to get submitted? It's going to get submitted to the side who's telling the truth based on the information that we get. So if it shows that the cops are lying, this is going to Jim's defense, which I suspect it'll probably go that way, as does Dave, because we've both been in foot chases. We both arrested people. We both had our guns out on people. We both shot at people. You know, there's different aspects to, I should say, there's different ways to view the way this is going to come out based on information. Okay, based on, look, Dave and I both know what police work is all about. We both know how it goes down, and we both know how cops try to cover their own and each other's butts. They really try to see why, cover your ass, and it's cover your buddy's ass too. That's the way these guys work. That's the way we suspect it works. If, in fact, it comes out that the cops are trying to cover themselves and they lied on their arrest report, one guy shot a misdemeanor suspect, and then the two of them lied on their arrest reports, my personal goal is going to be to see them, especially the guy that pulled the trigger, not only out of a job, but behind bars. If you're going to take your oppression under the color of office and engage with lethal force a fleeing misdemeanor suspect and then change what actually happened in your report to cover your own ass to make them look bad, you are the last type of person that should have a badge and any sort of authority as a law enforcement officer. And on top of that, violating his civil rights, well, that, my fair weathered friend, is something that deserves time behind bars. And I have no problem doing my level best to see that go down. If there's cops that are going to be shooting misdemeanor people because they don't want them to run, here's the deal. Jim was just returning to town from a trip to Carson City. He had a rental car. I guess he didn't want to put the miles on his truck. I can understand. He's got a V8 pickup truck. Who wants to put all those miles when you're driving 6 or 7 hours, you know, better part of 500 miles? So he has a rental car. Put the miles on that. All of his stuff is in the rental car. Of course, the rental car is in his name. The cop already knows who he is, and he runs away. Now, had I been there, I flat guarantee my response would have been, okay, we'll get you later. Now, they charged him with resisting arrest, which is going to be a little difficult. The guy tased Jim, and Jim already knew, before the taser ever came out, he knew from the vast use of tasers in law enforcement and his medical history, he knew years ago that if he ever got tased, it could mean his life. So he's running for his life from essentially what is tyranny being perpetrated on his person. Running for his life. They are saying resisting arrest. That's going to be a tough one to put. Plus, resisting arrest used to be a misdemeanor. Now it's a felony. And I would imagine that if you could go and actually demonstrate some of the writings of the Founding Fathers and their definitions of tyranny and relate that to what happened in Jim's case and then wonder how in the world resisting arrest without any physical interaction with the police officer, how that form of resisting arrest, as they would call it, could ever be considered a felony. I would think that could be challenged at the Supreme Court in the state. That's just one of the many things on my list. Even so, let's say it is, you're resisting arrest is going to have to be, you know, pretty harshly proven here. When it's the cop that kept upping the ante. Turn around. Wait, I want to talk about this. Turn around or I'm going to tase you. You're not going to tase me because there's no combative going on. It's only verbal communication at this point. So he tases him. Jim knows he could die if he doesn't get away from this. So he runs, he rips these things out of his chest. Cop shoots him. Now, you tell me how in the world that's justified. You tell me. I was reading, you know, different things online about this story, and I read a story last night that some ignorant jackass puke put on there talking about how, you know, libertarians are so far out there they ought to get shot by the cops anyhow. And how Jim Dunsing must be some sort of libertarian fruitcake, you know, way off on the wing. And here's his garbage story about his side, which he posted online. And just really slamming him. I took the opportunity to put a post up refuting this guy's story, letting him know what a complete ignoramus he was and how he showed his ass in fine style, even reporting the way that he did, and that it's best just to sit there yelling at the television rather than getting online and posting anything. To leave the reporting, the investigation, and the publishing up to us professionals, not to his Monday morning quarterback, where he shouldn't do anything more than yell at the TV. Stay tuned, guys. More coming at you after the break. Be right back.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. Okay. So, here's my question to you. What should happen to cops when they are found to lie in an official investigations and or cops who perjure themselves in court? Now, here's the thing that I have experienced. Cops will lie in official reports to make it look like any mistakes that they made or things that they did before the law says they could actually do it. And then when it finds out that their hunch is right, they kind of rewrite history based on the information they find. They think somebody might have drugs in their car. So they toss the car, even though that they don't really have all of the elements to be able to legally toss the car, and they find drugs. Then they go back, and they, based on whatever they find in the car, they evaluate, okay, well, what I can put down in my report and testify to is that, based on what I found in the car, I must have known that da-da-da-da-da was in the car before I searched it, which would then put me on better legal ground and better legal standing to have actually searched the car. Otherwise, this is what's called fruits of the poisonous tree. The first time I went beyond the law or outside of the law, then everything else found after that is gone. Fruits of the poisonous tree. So they lie in their reports. They lie to other investigators if they ask, and then they'll perjure themselves in court. Now, sometimes they're found out. Oftentimes they're found out about a very, very solid defense attorney and their investigation, investigators that they hire. Well, I tell you what. When it comes to Jim Dunsing's case, there's going to be several people who are qualified to look at this that will be helping with the investigation for free. We're just going to be doing it because this is a case that should not stand. Not so much that just because Jim is our friend and colleague, but because what happened to Jim is absolutely wrong. And until these cops pay for their lies, and especially the one that shot, for his deadly sin, until this goes down, we're not going to rest. Provided that's the way that the investigation rolls. Again. And that's what we imagine is going to happen. However, what should happen? Well, I have said before, many times, that anybody that is elected into public office, or appointed by an elected official, or hired into a government position, if they commit any sort of a crime, and they get convicted of it, they should get triple the sentence, be removed from that office, be prevented from ever holding any sort of public office, hired, appointed, or elected again for the rest of their life. I believe something very similar should happen to cops that lie or perjure themselves, or otherwise use their authority as a law enforcement officer for something other than intended purposes. If they get convicted of that, they should get triple the sentence. I don't see why it shouldn't be that way. I have been there. I've worked in a government position. I have been a cop. And I would have very readily accepted those ideals in either position. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Again, congratulations to Richard Fasula. I'll be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedom? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.